Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys,
do you
want
to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
Oh, the joke.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, Season 2, Episode 26 of Lights, Camera, Barstool. We got a crew in today since we're reviewing Studio 666. I decided to invite on Robbie. Because who better to just help us navigate the musical waters than someone who actually knows something about music, unlike us?
I'm very, very excited to be here. I got my Foo Fighter shirt on. I saw the movie in a big, like, fancy theater. I treated the premiere of this movie like it was, like, Endgame or something. I went to one of those iPick theaters in the city. You get your own little this isn't even an ad. You get your own little booth like you're in first class on a jet. You get your food like you order it through a real waiter. It was a really good time on Friday, so I'm excited to be on the show.
Mm-hmm. Those pictures were nuts that you put up. It looked like you were on like one of those Emirates first class flights.
It looked like a spaceship. It was crazy. The cup holder like came out of the side of the wall. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in the shitty.
I feel like I was on the Galactic Star Cruiser, which
yeah,
we'll talk about later.
We're gonna talk about it. Yeah, my theater is the 34th Street one. It's a piece of shit, and I'm not sure how yours was in Lansing.
I mean, it was.
Or Michigan, rather.
It was, well, no, it's fine. You can say Lansing. It was, it was Regal, which for some reason, I know Jeff, when Jeff is back on the pod, I want to ask him this. And Ken Jack, maybe you know. Does Regal traditionally play more ads before movies than other theaters do?
Huh. I feel like they're losing the theater battle, so to speak, at AMC, yeah. Maybe they supplement that by doing more ads.
That's what always bothers me. No, I mean, it was a Lansing theater inside a mall that is, this is true, just filed for bankruptcy like 2 weeks ago. So I don't know how long it'll be around, but the experience itself was whatever. It is a nice theater. It's just in a weird spot.
Yeah. That's my least favorite mall situation are the ones that are in, when they're in malls, like anywhere near Tanger Outlets and anything like that. I don't like the outlet malls. I don't like any of those with a theater. Like I just want to go to the freestanding movie theater, and they just don't. It's really tough. Not really too many of them around, I feel like, anymore, because they need to incorporate themselves into more successful businesses.
I'm going to the Batman this week in a theater inside a mall, and I'm already a little bit worried about like the rowdy mall kids. Like people that just want to see this movie. I'm going to like the earlier showing to try to avoid that. I'm going to like a 4 o'clock Thursday showing.
Oh, dude, you kind of screwed that up then, because that's right when all of them get out of school and go straight to the mall.
Yeah, fuck. You're right.
You didn't think that through.
Yeah. I'm going to be living the plot of Teenagers by My Chemical Romance.
You're going to be getting roasted. Yeah. Okay, but before we get into some of the news items ahead of reviewing Studio 666, and we're also going to be doing, by the way, a Build-A-Band draft with a very special audience, star, which they don't know about yet, neither Chris nor Robbie. We'll get there a little bit later on. But before we get to that, let's talk about Cuts Clothing. Look, there's already a lot on all of our minds. We all got stuff going on. We all have other things we'd rather be thinking about than, you know, going to pick out clothes. Because a lot of us, we have pretty shitty taste. So why not, you know, kind of take that out of the equation. Take your terrible taste out of this equation, dude. Cuts Clothing has perfected the art and the science of men's shirts. So you can throw one on and you can look great without ever thinking twice about it. Every Cuts shirt is designed for a modern tailored fit, and they're super comfortable. Like I literally wear mine almost every day at work. Plus, Cuts has all the essentials for looking sharp, like tees, hoodies, polos, and more. So you can stop bouncing between brands and just, you know, don't shop for any other shirts because these ones are the best ones. And I think the one that I have, it's like almost that moisture wicking material. I don't know what it's exactly called, but like it basically makes it feel like you're not sweating, which is awesome. They've completely and totally revolutionized the traditional outdated t-shirt category, make it easy to mix and match styles, colors, so you can find the perfect style. You know, if you like Henleys, no problem. Not for me, by the way. I'm not a Henley guy. Body does not fit for those. You need to have that V-taper. I do not have it. You have short sleeve crew necks. They've got it. They have basically something for everybody. And they developed their own fabric that would stand the test of time, won't shrink, won't pill, or fade over time in the wash, and it's super, super soft. Join the hundreds of thousands of guys who have made the simple decision to elevate their wardrobe with Cuts. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/lights. That's C-U-T-S clothing.com/lights for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Thank you to Cuts Clothing. We had a lot of Spider-Man stuff dumped on us on Monday and Monday and Tuesday, because I think they're sort of like revving up the machine for the Blu-ray release. They want to show you all the behind the scenes stuff. One of the first things, though, before the pictures and the memes and everything that came out from the behind the scenes of Toby and Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland all hanging out, we had Tom Holland on an interview saying, freely admitting that one of the Spider-Men wears a fake ass.
Yeah,
which kind of lit the internet up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, who do we think it is? It's got to be Toby, right? He's getting up there in age. Yeah,
I would say it has to be. And I think, like, and you know, we all love Tobey Maguire. We love Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, but I feel like there was discussion. I think it's steeped in reality about the fact that Andrew Garfield was like, "Oh, dude, I am so coming back for this. I will play this role again. I will play this role forever. I'm so lucky to do this." Whereas there was some rumors about, like, Toby was kind of asking for, you know, some incentives, a little bit more money. You know, he's in his 40s now. He had not been in anything in a while. I would love to see, like, my hope is that the final, like, stipulation in the contract was like, so we're doing the fake ass, right? Like, that was the last little bit of the labor negotiations to make a baseball reference, be like, I'll do it, we got to have the fake ass in there. And if so, then I'm all on board. Yeah.
And it needs to be better than the one that Cruz wore in Valkyrie. I hope the Sony emails get leaked again and we get to see that.
Yes.
Yes, there's definitely like a budget breakdown where they're like, is it cheaper for us to pad him? Would it look unrealistic? Can we CGI it if we have to? Can we do anything? Do we pay for Toby to get a BBL? Like, what do we do?
Toby's like both. We're going as much practical as possible, but then you're going to clean it up with CG in the end.
You have to bump it up too. And yeah, I agree. I think it was definitely Toby. Like, there's just there's no chances. Garfield works out. Like, he's in decent shape. And like, Tom Holland's just an athletic freak. This has to be Toby. He's 40. It's okay. You can pad a little bit.
Behind the scenes stuff of Holland is crazy. Him doing all the flips himself in the Spider-Man suit, where like he doesn't really have to. He's completely covered, but apparently he has that acrobatics background. There's some crazy behind the scenes videos of him, not only on this movie, on the previous two movies, doing some crazy stunts.
Honestly, that was one of the reasons I liked Uncharted too, is that like I'm cynical to a point where I can now tell when somebody's doing their stunts versus when they're not. So like watching that, I'm like, wow, he's actually doing this. There's something, I mean, that's something that goes overlooked, I feel like, as an actor, the fact that you throw yourself into, that's why I will say forever Jackie Chan is like one of the best actors ever, because he basically has gotten himself killed like 3 or 4 times, you know, doing stunts for his movies. So no, you're completely right about that. I mean, from day one, it's one of those rare perfect castings where not only does he capture the psychological elements of the role, but the physicality of it, he just, from day one, it was just a match made. Yeah.
What was the story, right? When he, I think, auditioned with the, I think for the Russos, like they asked him like, okay, like pretend you did a backflip here. And he's like, oh, you want me to just do it? And he just like did a backflip. And they're like, holy shit, this.
Like a standing backflip. Cool. They were like, maybe you're fucking Spider-Man.
Yeah, maybe you could be Spider-Man. This could all work out. But yeah, so a lot of those behind the scenes things came out because they're doing the Blu-ray release. They showed a lot of like, I think like a 2-minute clip of all of them talking together about like how cool it was. And they did the iconic Spider-Man 3-way point thing, which is the joke that we're all making since it was speculated that all 3 Spider-Man would be in the movie. And it was just cool. It's just like cool seeing them, you know, acknowledge some stupid internet stuff like that and making it a real thing. You know, it's weird that like it brings such an insane amount of like serotonin into my system. Like just looking at these guys hanging out, it's a fun thing to, as a fan.
Yeah, and the fact is they made it work, too. Something, because the movie, I really like No Way Home. For some reason, there are still people who think I do not like that movie. It was number 4 on my top 10 last year. I really like the movie. But it's one big nostalgic trip. But the fact is, all the nostalgia stuff works really, really well. I mean, we talked about it with Ghostbusters, where when those guys showed up at the end, it was like, oh my God, this is a bunch of geriatrics playing dress up. Whereas you watch No Way Home and they're all really committed and they all have great chemistry and they're funny. When Tobey Maguire showed up, it was like time never passed. And so all that stuff, like going back and watching the behind the scenes stuff and seeing the fact that it would have been very easy for any of them to kind of phone it in. And yet they were all really good together with each other. So it makes the experience a lot more fun to watch.
Yeah, I felt like all the pictures were like a victory lap. Like all the good reviews, they're like, check this out. Remember when we made that awesome movie? Like, we're going to remind you. The stuff they tease sounds cool, too. All the footage that they could put in the Blu-ray, or even there's talk of maybe putting it back in theaters with extended stuff or a little bit stuff. That's one of those movies where I feel like there's probably a lot of cool stuff that was left on the cutting room floor. Maybe some more Matt Murdock stuff, maybe some more stuff with Peter like getting arrested in the beginning. I know when he got the paint thrown on him, it was originally supposed to be a scene where Tom Holland like arrests his real life younger brother for shoplifting and stuff. So like if you give us a big three-hour cut, release the fucking Watts cut. I don't know. I would like to see as much of that movie as you could give us.
This didn't pick up a lot of traction, but there was a rumor, and I don't know his name, so forgive me for that, that a certain actor from Stranger Things – there was a photo of him on set of No Way Home in a motion capture suit that I believe it was, man, I can't remember the source. I really don't remember who it was that said this, implying that there was either a end of the movie scene or a post credit scene teasing Miles Morales. Now I can't confirm this being true, but it came from a source. It was, and it was somebody who I know Jeff went off on at one point. It was John Campion. I'm fine with Campia, but remember when he just released all the photos of Murdoch and told me about, like, which turned out to be true. You know, those were all real. And he said the photo I didn't post was of the Stranger Things actor in a motion capture suit, likely potentially portraying Miles Morales. Maybe he still hasn't posted it. He still hasn't.
Why not? Why is he holding it back at this point?
Probably because Sony was about to assassinate him if he posted.
Oh, maybe.
I'm never going to a premiere again. So, that was a rumor that, and you can go back through his page. I'm not making that up, but I think there probably is with a movie like that. It was the same with Endgame. Remember that really weird scene in Endgame that they cut of Catherine Langford and Robert Downey Jr. like in heaven.
Oh yeah,
it was a terrible scene, but like they shot that for the movie.
Yeah,
I think with those big event movies, they do a lot of throwing things at the wall and making sure like just keeping what sticks, just to make sure that they have as much footage as they can use, and a lot of stuff gets cut out. So I do feel like there is more to not just this movie, but more to the Spidey MCU universe that probably was taken out of that film.
Yeah, I mean, we heard that the like America Chavez, they initially took her out of the movie because they wanted to give her powers to like Ned instead to do that so they could save her for Doctor Strange and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's crazy that so much stuff gets left on the cutting room floor of big movies like this. And we still get like an almost 3-hour cut. But even the endgame scene where they're all kneeling by Tony Stark, like that one's like a little cringe.
That's not a good scene. Right, I know. Yeah, they went with, and it makes you realize just how good Endgame is, that like all the stuff shot. They went with all the right footage. I mean, the last
– definitely.
It's notorious now. The last hour of that movie is basically perfect.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Bonkers. Every single moment on the battlefield is so awesome. Like Tony and Tom hugging for the first time, the reunion of Gamora and Star-Lord, the kick in the nuts, like all of it I love.
It's just absolutely beautiful. You mentioned Daredevil before. This made me sad. This little bit made me sad. Someone we've interviewed before on this podcast, Charlie Cox, he said that him and his wife, they went to go watch the movie No Way Home, and they expected that when he showed up on screen as Daredevil, and he basically like Matt Murdock, that everyone would go nuts, just like everyone goes nuts at every like reveal of Toby or of Andrew Garfield, whatever. And he's like, yeah, nobody clapped, nobody gasped, nothing, got no reaction. And I was like, dude. I had a reaction. I wanted to like reach out and grab him and hug him and be like, I gasped. I cheered when you came up on screen, man. I just feel so bad for him.
That's really sad. That's like that just made me feel sad for him. And I did get to see it in theaters, not until like the second or third opening weekend, because I had COVID initially when it came out. We talked about that on the review. But when I went, there were for sure some gasps in the theater, like when he showed up. And that was how I would describe the reaction too. It wasn't claps. It wasn't people going nuts. It was a lot of, oh shit, that's so. And you hear people telling the person next to them, like, he's in the Netflix show and it's not connected, but now it is. Now they're bringing it all in. And it's like, you know, you heard everyone doing that little spiel.
Yeah. It's surprising. And for the actor, by the way, from Stranger Things is Caleb McLaughlin, is his name. But
he would be a good casting. I never heard that rumor, but I like that.
I'll send the video because I'm not pulling this out of my ass. This was said, but I as far as the Charlie Cox thing, that's surprising because I saw it in close to Detroit. There were claps. I mean, I saw it in a big theater, but it was, I saw, you know, people were excited about it. I think that the biggest issue is the passage of time. Daredevil ended 17, 18. And so we're talking about 3-4 years had passed. So I think that people just either had not seen that series or had forgotten about it or were confused. In general, the lame and the average moviegoer doesn't know those series the way that we do. So they might've just seen it and went, huh, that looks kind of familiar. I feel like I've seen that guy before, not knowing that there was a Matt Murdock Daredevil connection. He also said, I don't know if it was the same interview, he's going to get his just due at some point. I don't know if it's going to be a Daredevil movie. I don't know if it's going to be some sort of team up with another character, but I think they would not have brought him into No Way Home if they didn't have some plans for him in the MCU. I think, you know, I think him, a team up with him and Blade would be absolutely badass. So we'll see what happens with that character. But he's going to get his due at some point because he's so great as Daredevil.
I agree. And the fact that they were like, we're not recasting, like Kevin Feige, even before he got brought in, was like, there's just no way we're recasting him. So I feel like Feige loves him as much as a lot of the fans do.
Exactly. Out of all the Netflix shows, he's by far the most loved one. And he's the smart one to keep. Yeah, what's his name? Luke Cage, out of here. Iron Fist. Out of here. Those guys, out of here.
Jessica Jones, people kind of liked, right? I didn't watch that.
Yeah.
They liked the first season.
First season was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Like that was easily the second best only to Daredevil, which was awesome. And like,
and she's again, a good actress. So if you wanted to give that character another shot in the MCU, like I wouldn't mind Kristen Ritter joining the MCU.
Was Iron Fist or the Inhumans the worst Marvel like MCU? Like people say stuff like, I didn't like Eternals very much, but Eternals at least had some merit. Those,
it's like a well-made movie at least, you know, you could be like, all right, I see where they're going.
Those two series have this weird bizarre, they don't even feel like they're a part of the universe. I mean, even the most diehard of diehard MCU fans hate those series, even like before it came out, Inhuman. I remember wasn't there that story that Inhumans like got booed at Comic-Con?
Yeah,
like people laughed at Comic-Con. Like, you understand, these are the same people who gave the trailer for X-Men Origins Wolverine a standing ovation,
like for 10 minutes.
These are a bunch of Robbie Foxes booing. Imagine a bunch of Robbie Foxes booing a superhero movie.
I know. There's a lot of stuff. Those were both like big. Think like Ike Perlmutter. Like passion projects that completely fell apart.
And
I think I gave each of them a shot and couldn't make it through the first episode of either.
Yeah, they were both pretty rough. I think kind of just like a general misunderstanding of the source material and like what makes them cool. Moving on from comic book stuff, we got yet another famous actor or multiple famous actors cast into the new Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer movie. We also had a picture of Cillian Murphy as Robert Oppenheimer for the first time, which basically it's just him in a hat in black and white.
Oh,
which is
unrecognizable. He can't even tell it's him. No,
couldn't even tell it's him. Oh, yeah. Peaky Blinders is coming back this week, too. I forgot about
that. I'm going to start that. I've never seen Peaky Blinders going to start that because I love him. Tom Hardy joins the cast at some point, right? I love him. So I'm going to give Peaky Blinders a shot.
Really, really good show. That's coming. The cast now for this includes obviously Cillian Murphy, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, Florence Pugh, Rami Malek, Benny Safdie, who is obviously one of the directors of Good Time, Uncut Gems, also starred in Good Time, also is now being an actor in a couple other movies as well. Josh Hartnett's in it. We just recently interviewed Dane DeHaan, who we actually also interviewed, is in it. Jack Quaid from The Boys is in it. Alden Ehrenreich, a.k.a. Solo, is in it. And David Dalmastikin, who's basically his career was made by Chris Nolan when he played that like fucked up. What was it? Like the institution,
like an institution that acted as a cop. He had Dawes written on his thing. That was kind of what he was famous for in The Dark Knight. Yeah.
Yeah. And he had a really like kind of like chilling reaction to The Dark Knight, like interrogating him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this cast, man, it's been going absolutely ballistic. And like, I don't really know, like they announced a while back that it's going to be shot in IMAX, which means that this isn't going to be like your standard biopic or whatever. Like they're going to have some really crazy stuff in this movie. And the cast is just, it's just absolutely bonkers. And if there's anything I think we know about Nolan, it's that like he's extremely good at like navigating the large scale things, which is, this is obviously you're seeing the genesis of nuclear bombs is about as big as you get. I am interested. I don't know that I've ever seen him work with an ensemble cast like this before. Like he's worked with multiple very good actors like in movies, but like I don't think I've ever seen him handle an ensemble, and I'm interested to see how he navigates that and how he like gives everyone their just desserts, as far as like, you know, you have Florence Pugh or Matt Damon in your movie, you can't have them on screen for 2 minutes, you know what I mean? Like they have to eat a little bit, and I kind of want to see how he does this.
And this is a weird one though, no Michael Caine here.
Yeah,
that's a good luck charm. That's a weird one, but
says he's not retired from acting, right? Which is weird because it's like, wait, if he's not retired, then why give him a 2 minute role? You know?
Yeah, I know. I felt the same way. I'm really excited for this. I mean, I love Nolan forever. I know this won't happen, but looking at that promotional image, I think it would be really cool if this was shot in black and white. I know it's a $100 million movie, so he won't do it. But like all the famous footage of Oppenheimer is black and white, so I think it would be really cool to do that, and maybe there'll be a cut of it at some point. But yeah, I mean, I think that he has, this will be big because that's what he does, but I do think, I've said this on the pod before, I think he got a little bit tired of the $200 million projects, just how huge in scope and in scale his movies got. Even though this is an amazing cast, I think this will be something that's a little bit smaller, but also very accessible. So I can't wait. Is this next year? Is this 23?
This is, I want to say 2023, maybe 2024.
I think it's 23. If it's 23, then it's my most anticipated movie of that year. I mean, I would be surprised if anything tops it. I really hope this is great.
July 21st, 2023 is the date right now.
No,
I think this would be like my most anticipated movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a real poster. I just looked up the release date and they just had like a poster on IMDb of it.
Fan
this
made?
This can't be real. It has to be fan made. Yeah, this is just like a still of him from.
Yeah.
This is a still of him from Peaky Blinders and they just put a different hat on him. That's crazy. that's funny, actually. But yeah, no, I totally agree with what you're saying, Chris. There's definitely like a little bit of like a weird expectation there. And also beyond just because like him financially recouping those projects, like the money that's invested in them, he's also very much like a unicorn in cinema, and that like he makes these projects that are incredibly profitable, but they're also extremely well like critically received. So like, audiences love them, critics love them. Not many people can do that, and nobody does it as consistently as Nolan does. And this is something where like it's not Batman, it's not a time warping Tenet, it's not like Interstellar. Like this isn't something that jumps off the screen. It's like this is going to be, if people are going to sit their ass in the theater to watch Robert Oppenheimer, but like I think they will because it's Christopher Nolan. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. You slap Nolan's name on it, you slap that cast on it, like that, this movie's gonna make boatloads of money. And I agree with Chris, like looking forward to this in that it's probably gonna be like turned down a little bit from the normal Nolan stuff. He's also probably my favorite director, and I would say I liked Tenet, but it got like a little too Nolan-y at times. You turn the Nolan up to 11 and it's okay, I need to sit down, put on closed captions and watch every second of this movie to make sure I understand it 50% of the way through, so by the next time I could understand it. I don't think Oppenheimer is going to be a confusing, mind-bending movie. I think we're going to sit down and kind of go back to the basics of Christopher Nolan. Even The Prestige, which is like, other than The Dark Knight, my favorite Nolan movie.
So good.
It's confusing, but it's not hard to follow at any point. Like they do the twist at the end, but it's a little more subdued and telling us about these two people's lives and their rivalry with each other. I feel like that's what this is going to be. And I also agree with you, Ken Jack, where it's like the ensemble cast I'm excited for, but it worries me that people I'm excited to see aren't going to get their full due on screen. Like Robert Downey Jr. has been in pieces of shit other than Iron Man. We talked about it last time. Like, what is his agent up to? I hope he gets a big chunk of this movie. I want to see Christopher Nolan directing Robert Downey Jr. and what that looks like. So, like, I hope that everything is balanced in the right way. And I'm sure it's going to be 3 fucking hours. So, you know, it will be. But fingers crossed. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
This is another random thing, too. Like, let's call it for what it is. Josh Hartnett feels really out of place in this cast.
He kind of does.
He's making a comeback, to be fair to him.
One thing I love about one thing I love about Nolan is he doesn't give a fuck who's in his movies. I remember when he did an interview with when he casted Harry Styles in Dunkirk. I don't think Nolan thinks about anything other than filmmaking at any point during the day. So they asked, I don't think he knew who he was, honestly, like, because they asked, they were like, you know, it's kind of weird that you cast this guy from a boy band in your war movie. And he goes, yeah, he came in, he auditioned, he was really good, so we cast him. Like, I think that he really, he has that pull in Hollywood where it doesn't really matter to him star power. Now he has stars in his movies, but I think he's just hell bent on being like, I just want the best person possible. And I think that's really admirable as a director.
Mm-hmm. Just whatever works. I like that too. We all got a first look at Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al. And it was just, it's weird to see, man. We talked about this casting a couple episodes ago, or I guess a lot ago. But it's just very strange seeing him as Weird Al, because I don't see him as the fit, because I think they're both very weird people, right? Like, literally Weird Al. Like, he is just a weird dude. He's kooky, he's funky, whatever. And, like, Daniel Radcliffe is also weird, but they're different types of weird. Like, Weird Al is very charismatic, very lovable, very all these things. Like, I like Daniel Radcliffe a lot, but he gives more of like the creepy weird energy versus the like lovable charismatic weird energy. And like, so that's why I'm a little bit weirded out by it. And seeing this poster, like, it doesn't really, or the image doesn't really show you much. It's just like him in the outfit playing the accordion, but like it's just kind of like, this is what we're gonna get. I can't believe it. A Roku Channel original movie.
Roku original movie.
Wow, really?
Yeah, Roku Channel original movie. And it is written by, I think, Eric Appel, I think is his name, who's done a lot of really good TV stuff. He did a bunch of episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He did Son of Zorn, which is sneakily pretty good. Silicon Valley, a bunch of other stuff as well. And he's Michael J. Fox show. Forgot about that show. But yeah, so I don't know. What do you guys think of it?
I didn't even know Roku made movies, so that, I mean, worries me a little bit.
It might be their first. Like, I have no idea.
It's a Roku movie. That makes me think weird. I mean, I'm not going to believe this is a movie until I watch it start to finish and I see credits roll. Until then, I'm going to believe it's a Jimmy Kimmel prank. But I just can't. Like you said, it's a different type of weird. Like, Daniel Radcliffe weird is Swiss Army Man weird, where it's like a dead farting corpse and you're like, what the fuck is this art project? Whereas Weird Al's like, a long, long time ago, fucking parody songs and funny Yoda songs. And I don't know, I think it's weird, but I like Weird Al, so I'm like, I'll give it a shot, I guess. Maybe you could make a great biopic about Weird Al wanting to do polka and realizing parody songs were the way to go. I don't know.
I just hope, and I feel like this is going to be a relatively light biopic, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I do hope there comes a point where they take things somewhat seriously, because in this age of fucking moronic people trying to cancel other people, I think that maybe the most likable human being of all time is Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, the guy's been around for I said this before, he's been around for a million years and nobody dislikes him. Like, I think there's something really admirable about that, and I hope the entire thing isn't played like one big joke. I hope they actually have some semblance of heart and honesty throughout this thing that makes you realize, man, Weird Al really has, like, he's had like a legit impact, not just on parody music, but on actual music and comedy. And so I hope that's the case. And I do like Daniel Radcliffe. But this is one of those things. I could see this being a sensational, like, home run. And I could see it being something that has like a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes that just has I have no gauge on how successful or unsuccessful that this is going to be, which admittedly does intrigue me quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm very fascinated by it. And Weird Al is involved too, which I think also makes me a little bit happier knowing that he's going to help like Radcliffe kind of navigate the trying to play him, which I imagine is an insanely difficult task for any actor. Period.
Let alone a British one, right? Like,
Let alone
not even just doing the accent, it's doing the zaniness and everything. Weird Al had a great tweet when they announced the casting, and he's like, this will be the role that Daniel Radcliffe is known for until the day he dies.
Yes, that was very, very funny. That actually reminds me, you're speaking to most lovable people. I remember Paul Rudd once, like his he dressed as Weird Al for Halloween, and his daughter who was with him out on Halloween was dressed as the Wasp. And it's like, imagine being his daughter. It's like, you could be the Ant-Man to her Wasp. And he's like, nah, I want to be Weird Al.
He had so a little funny accordion. It was like a tiny little thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. Two of the most likable dudes ever. He actually put him in a pretty good Weird Al if they're going to make a Weird Al movie. But
he actually would have been.
He's probably like only 10 years younger than Weird Al, I would guess. Maybe something like that.
That could have been a funny charm of the movie, of he's playing like a young Weird Al as a clearly old person.
Yeah, even though he's not even that clearly old.
Paul Rudd, true. Yeah, he doesn't age. Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Next that we had a look, the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, which only costs like $6,000 for a 2-night stay. It's really weird to kind of judge this as just seeing it through video clips, but like a lot of it looked really cool. But like the second I see that price tag of like, was it $5,300 or $5,400? Like for two people and a baby or a child or whatever to stay there for 2 nights. I'm just like, I can't imagine any immersive experience is worth that amount of money to me. Robbie, I know you're the biggest Star Wars guy. So you got, what do you think of it?
I feel the same way. Like everything looks cool if it were in Star Wars land as just part of the park. Like if Rey and Kylo Ren broke out into that fight, if they did the Sabacc games in the courtyard or whatever, it would all be really cool. And it would be something that I would say, oh my God, Star Wars fans are going to love this. You just can't justify the price. It's outrageous. The little tiny bunkers that look like you're in a cruise ship or something, pretty tiny. So it's like, yes, it's cool, but man, I don't know who it's for. Clearly they're going to sell out, but even the itinerary, when you look at that, it looks intimidating. It looks daunting. It doesn't look like a fun, relaxing Star Wars-y vacation. It's like, how are we going to hit this, this, this? And it doesn't look like they really have it all figured out either, because things are overlapping and people are like, I missed this. I wanted to go to this. So right now, I mean, there's no way I would even consider a 1% chance of me doing it. And I feel like that says a lot about, you know, the Star Cruiser. It looks cool, but not cool enough to even think about.
Mm-hmm. It feels like one of those things that rich people would do just to say they did it, but not actually enjoy it. What's that? Disney like is the masters of this. What's that one place it's like Studio 52 or something that has like a 5-year wait list. It's like a restaurant inside of Disneyland.
Oh yeah. I don't know the name of it, but I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's just like some random restaurant that for some reason has this super prestigious thing. I think it's kind of like this, like Galaxy's Edge, which I've never been to. That's something you go to actually experience it and enjoy it and have fun with it. Whereas this is such a novelty thing that you can go to if you're super rich, brag about it with your friends, say, hey, I went there, but I don't really think that there's anyone who would look at this and be like, this sounds like a great bit of hospitality. It's a novel thing. And so I'm sure a lot of people will go, but yeah, we kind of fall in line with each other there, Robbie.
Yeah. Club 33, by the way, is what you were.
That's what it was. Yeah. What did I say? Yeah. Studio 52. That was close. Yeah.
You're thinking Studio 54, the disco club. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you guys. And just there's no situation where I would imagine justifying that amount. And there is people who have enough to do that. Bravo to them. I feel like there's a lot of people that are in a price bracket below that would enjoy it way more than any of them would. So
some of the shit they added on that, the dance lessons. Did you see the video of the dance lessons?
Yeah.
Legit. Like just step to the side, step back. Now step to the side. It's like, what Star Wars fan would enjoy that even in the slightest? It seemed like they were just like, what else can we get in there? A 15-minute block of bingo and dancing. Yeah. Like, that's one of the things. They renamed it bingo, and they put, little symbols on it. It's like, who put this together?
The people who would have enjoyed it were the people who loved Star Wars Connect with the Han Solo dance sequence. I think they are all in on the dance lessons. Other than that, I can't see anybody else doing
Star Wars Connect. That's an all-time video now of him doing the dance.
It's like him dancing like Black Eyed Peas or something. It was like, I was
the
ridiculous.
Original Connect also, an all-time, you buy it thinking it was going to be awesome. There's no controllers on video games anymore, and that thing was the worst.
What a bust that was.
Bringing it back around to movies too, one of the all-time product placements in movies is when I think it was Paranormal Activity 4 made the Kinect. Like, do you guys not remember this?
No, I didn't make it to four in the series.
There's a part in Paranormal Activity 4 where the ghost sets off the Xbox Kinect. If it's in the trailer,
no way.
It's in the trailers. You go back and watch.
I don't remember that at all.
There's a moment in the trailer where somebody says, oh, something happened. They set off the Kinect or something like that. And this is, yeah. I can't believe we found a bit of movie tidbit information that you guys did not know. Yeah, I remember because I remember listening to a review for it because the first three Paranormal Activities are actually like, you know, they have merit. And then all of a sudden the fourth one is a fucking Thelma and Louise fucking drive off a cliff. And because the Kinect is the best character in the movie.
Yeah, I think the first Paranormal Activity is the most profitable movie of all time or something.
They made it for like $1.50.
That shit was
one of the most brilliant marketing campaigns ever for a movie. Yeah, which was the whole demand it, where they were like, hey, like tell, go on Facebook, tell people you want to see this in your theater, in your, you know, city. And it ended
fun
up being
fact, Jared Carabas was one of the people that demanded it and got it in his city and like got his name in the credits or something.
Really? No fucking way. That makes sense. Yeah. He's a huge horror guy.
I liked the first three too. I think the third one was the one where it's like the girls were in the mirror doing the like Bloody Mary or something. Yeah. The first three were okay. Yeah. Definitely as far as horror movies go.
The production of this movie cost $15,000. The post production cost $215,000. And then the box office was $193 million.
That is
my
insane,
God.
Dude. And I remember that was the one. Because that was when they were – that was like Saw 5 or Saw 6, something like that, that came out, which was this part of this huge horror franchise. And Paranormal Activity, which is a movie that like half its budget went to Fishing Wire, just beat the shit out of it at the box office that week. Yep. And they were like, whoa, like this is really – this is officially a big phenomenon. Yeah. No, it has more merit than a lot of other horror series do.
Yeah.
The commercials were so good with the night vision cameras in the theaters too. People, the shocked reactions. That was so good.
Yeah.
People just love that sort of found footage thing, man. And it still intrigues me to this day. Anytime I watch a found footage movie, like whether it's Blair Witch or whatever, or VHS
is a good one.
VHS fucked me up, man. VHS 2 as well. Also pretty good.
Yeah, both of them. Like the cult and VHS. That's like one of the best little stories in that.
I love that. It's a bit dated, but I love The Last Broadcast too. I mean, it's a bit cornball, but by today's standards, but it's atmospheric.
You guys into the first Cloverfield? I'm a big Cloverfield.
I love the
guy.
Matt Reeves, baby. I mean, that was the little fun fact for the people out there. The first bit of content that Chris Castellani ever created, and I can share this at some point, was January 20th, 2008. 12-year-old Chris uploaded a movie review on YouTube, which is still on YouTube. People can find it.
I will have to
share that.
That movie like inspired you in a way.
It was a big because it had the greatest teaser trailer ever.
Remember
before Transformers when this movie that nobody recognized any of these actors, and all of a sudden the fucking Statue of Liberty head is flung across a bunch of skyscrapers and there was no title. All it was for 6 months, the title of that movie was 1-18-08. It was just the release date. They didn't have a title. I think it's the greatest teaser trailer of all time, and it became a hit because of that. And God damn it, can we get a proper sequel to Cloverfield finally?
I know. Please? I want one so bad. That Super Bowl piece of shit movie was.
You
see, I thought 10 Cloverfield Lane was actually great.
Yes.
Love it.
Like John Goodman should have like gotten a fucking Oscar nomination for that.
I agree.
Good in it.
But it's not a Cloverfield movie. It's a really good bottle film that was made that ended up having a Cloverfield name attached to it. And Cloverfield Paradox was a pile of shit. That movie
was garbage, terrible.
Which also had a good teaser trailer. The idea of in the middle of the Super Bowl, them being like, this movie's fucking live after the game. Are you kidding me? Cloverfield does it again with their marketing campaign. And it was a struggle to get through.
My hope is that they do that again too, where I don't know if with budgetary reasons, it'd be such a risk. It was Overlord was also supposed to be part of
like rumored to be part of that. Yeah.
I was under the impression it was supposed to, then they just said, we just can't make this work.
I think, to put this full circle, I think the guy who directed Overlord is the guy who directed the cult sequence from VHS. If I remember correctly.
Oh, really? Get out of here.
I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive.
Overlord was not bad, by the way. I thought Overlord was pretty decent. Overlord,
I heard it was good. Yeah. I never saw it. I heard it was good though. I think they've come up with this idea that they want to make Cloverfield this anthology thing where each movie is. I don't like that. Cloverfield was about a giant monster that attacked New York City one time. Like, let's see. Like, I want to see a proper sequel, the follow up of what happened after that. And there was this whole And Cloverfield had so many like brilliant shit. And it, like, remember the end credits of Cloverfield when there was just this indecipherable message? And if you played it backwards, it said it's still alive. Like, I know I'm cynical, but like, we don't do that with movies anymore, where we where we have these random things where we, instead of spoon feeding the audience, we actually make them like decipher shit. And the way that movie ends, where you're not really sure of what happened to the characters, not really sure what happened to the monster. That's one that's actually, to me, is aged better than it did even when it came out, because it was polarizing when it came out. But yeah, make a sequel. It was announced too, like a year ago. They said we're making a sequel to Cloverfield.
I know. And I got so excited for it too. Like, I'm such a sucker for that universe, and I just want them to make a true sequel like you. I feel like everyone that loves that universe wants that. So it's like, I don't know, if they would have kept making anthology movies the quality of 10 Cloverfield Lane, I wouldn't be complaining. True. But, you know, they ended it with Paradox, which sucked. And it was another, like, movie where it's clearly not a Cloverfield movie, where they put a shot of the monster in at the end, too. It was like, they gave us the monster, too. It wasn't like, this could be connected to the same universe, like 10 Cloverfield Lane. They were like, I don't know, here's fucking Darth Vader. It's like,
they had the dude from Grounded for Life and what was clearly a reshoot on CNN talking about, we can open other portals to different universes. And they're like, oh, and then they added the fucking Slusho bobblehead. And we're like, I know what this is.
Like, yeah, I like how you, there's, and it's weird. And now everything's coming more full circle. Because I recently started rewatching Freaks and Geeks for the first time in a while. And Cloverfield stars Lizzie Kaplan, who's in Freaks and Geeks. Mm-hmm. And the guy from Grounded for Life, the dirtbag uncle, was in an episode I just watched as well. And it's so weird. You know Grounded for Life. That was one of my favorite sitcoms. But, like, no one watched that.
Grounded for Life was a great show. There was always a two-hour block on ABC Family every time I came home from school when I was young. By the way, that actor is Donald Logue, who I actually like quite a bit.
Donald Logue.
Referring to him as the guy from Grounded for Life. But, yeah, I did not expect to have this much Cloverfield talk, but
It's Matt Reeves week. It worked.
You know what? Exactly. He's earned it. Yep.
In a few weeks, there'll be like another sci-fi movie announced, and people are going to speculate it'll be a Cloverfield movie. It happens every every year, at least. One of them happens. We had a trailer. We were speaking about Andrew Garfield before. We had a trailer for a new series called Under the Banner of Heaven. It's going to be on FX. It's a detective program or detective program. What is it? Fucking 1950. detective show on FX. It's about a Mormon detective whose faith is shaken when he's investigating the murder of a woman that seems to involve the church. Stars Andrew Garfield, obviously. It also has Sam Worthington, who I feel like I haven't seen in a decade. After Avatar and Terminator Salvation. A couple other random ones in between. Clash of the Titans. That's what I was forgetting. Which is very bad. Yeah, big time classic. The first original, so the trailer looked kind of interesting. It's cool seeing Andrew Garfield in a role where it's not something I'm more used to. Like, he's really good in serious roles. Like, I think Silence is one of the best movies Martin Scorsese made. Like, he's crazy good in that movie, Andrew Garfield, when he does serious stuff. But he's also good at the goofy stuff, like Tick, Tick, Boom, which you just finished watching, right, Robbie?
I watched that, right before we started recording this podcast, and I thought it was awesome. I didn't know anything about the guy's story, his actual real-life story, so watching that all unfold, the songs, the fact that he could sing, I said, is just unfair. They got to nerf him. He's overpowered. I'm looking forward to this. It looks like it could be a True Detective season. In a world where that's an anthology series, I could see this getting pitched as True Detective season 4 and then being like, no, so FX bought it. But I think this looks really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he's Andrew Garfield, you know, ironically, they're both Marvel actors, is at that point that like Robert Downey Jr. was at in the late 2000s, where it's just like, dude, everything he's in, I just want to see it. And it's because he never went away. Andrew Garfield never had like some falling out. He wasn't Sam Worthington, who was like supposed to be the biggest movie star ever and then just fell off the face of the earth. Like, Andrew Garfield's always been around, but it seemed like he kind of did the Pattinson route where he was doing a lot of smaller stuff. And now he's back to being what he should be, which is an actual like legitimate movie star. So no, I'm actually looking forward to this. It's based on true story, right? I think it said that. Yeah, definitely.
I think
said that. So I like the true crime stuff, and he's just such a brilliant actor with the projects he's been taking. Outside of being able to do everything, like you said, Robbie, he's 38 and he still looks like he did in the first Amazing Spider-Man. Like, so
he's almost 40. That just blew my mind as you said it.
It's so strange because the one issue with the first Amazing Spider-Man is like, this motherfucker's just too old to be in high school, but he hasn't aged since then. So it's bizarre how like that arc has gone with his career. But no, he's such a great actor, man. And so I am intrigued by this. I bet it'll be well received. I mean, it's been a minute since he's done anything bad.
Yeah, and he's on like just a tear. He's had like, I feel like, a bunch of movies released over the last few years, a lot of shows and everything. But he's actually, when you were mentioning Tick Tick Boom, he was nominated for an Oscar for that. And the Oscars, after last episode, Chris, we were talking about how they added Amy Schumer and how that was just a brain dead move. They do yet another brain dead move, and they decide to cut out 8 of the awards from the award ceremony. So now they're not going to have sound editing, no original score, no animated short, no live action short, no production design, no documentary short, and no makeup and hairstyling, which is, it's just one of those things like, what are we doing here? Right.
Yeah. Original score seems like a huge one too. I'm looking at the list now, like sound editing, live action short, animated short. I hate to say it to the people that work so hard in those categories. I feel like those are usually the categories where most people are like, I haven't seen any of these.
Yeah.
But like original score, like that's the one John Williams would be up for. You're telling me like that's not going to be on the Oscars anymore? Documentary short is another one. Makeup and hairstyling should probably be on there. I feel like that's like a fun for one sure. Usually. They usually have some kind of crazy CG movie that wins that.
So the nominees right now for Best Original Score, we would have had Nicholas Britell from Don't Look Up. We would have had Hans Zimmer up there for Dune. We would have had Jermaine Franco, who did Encanto, a couple others as well. Power of the Dog, Johnny Greenwood, which is a pretty good score as well. Like, that's like a big award, I feel like, for them to dump. I agree with you, Robbie. I think both production design and makeup and hairstyling are two that are very interesting, like very interesting awards and very interesting categories. And I would have thought that like for them, they would want to maybe highlight that, because that's something that like you don't need to watch Power of the Dog or whatever to like appreciate cool costumes, or like you don't need to watch like whatever West Side Story to be like, wow, this is an insane production design.
Yeah,
I was just watching one of those shots from West Side Story, the shot where like they follow the crew into the gym, and they do a big sweeping like crane shot like all the way through the goddamn gym and reverses it and sets it down. Like, it's crazy. Like, those are like big achievements, and for them to just dump it out, it's just another brain dead move.
Yeah, I and for the people listening, I apologize for the audio quality. My laptop is kind of on the fritz, but I this doesn't bother me, and it's not, if they would have discontinued the categories themselves, I'd say, yeah, that's bullshit. People work hard on this. Like, you can't do that. But you have to look at it from a business standpoint and understand that people aren't watching the Oscars anymore. And a big reason for it is the show is just way too goddamn long. And while, like, I love Hans Zimmer, and I think Hans Zimmer is one of the most brilliant composers of all time. And despite my issues with Dune, I thought the score for that was absolutely incredible. But the average, like, hey, I might watch the Oscars tonight person doesn't really want to listen to like Hans Zimmer's speech. I know, and that sounds mean, and I'm not saying that's fair, but people tune into the Oscars. The average fan tunes to the Oscars. There's people who tune in for the fashion, but people tune in to see who wins the 6, 7, 8 major categories. They want to see the movie stars. Yeah. They don't really want to hear a 5-minute speech about how, you know, the production designer from Power of the Dog thanking their mom. Like, it's just not important to those people. Not saying that's right, but just looking at it from a business standpoint and a production standpoint of, you know, a show that probably needs to be cut down. It's 4 hours every year. It doesn't bother me that much, though, as people who are diehard fans of film. I do get that criticism, though, of feeling like you're kind of being gypped out of what should be a real celebration of movies.
And this is, I think, the issue with the Oscars in general, is that it's an industry award show, right? It's made, done by the people in the industry for the people in the industry. But I think that the Academy kind of takes, like, they want to dip their toes into both sides of the water. They want a lot of people to watch it because of their contract with ABC or whatever. And, like, they need the numbers for that because they pay for a lot of the production and all that stuff. Like, they need that. But they also want to remain sort of like, not exclusive, but like they want to remain true to the fact that it is an industry award. So like a lot of times they'll make mistakes. They'll be like, yeah, we're going to do a favorite movie this year. Yeah, we're going to do this year. And everyone on film Twitter freaks the fuck out. And like everyone in like the industry is like, what are we doing this for? This is an industry, blah, blah, blah. Like it's every move they make seems to just always be wrong. And while I'll agree with you, Chris, in that like, yeah, like the average person watching it isn't watching it to see that, they're not watching, period. Like, and that's the thing.
That's fair.
the people who are watching want to see that stuff. Anyone who's going to sit there and tune into the Oscars, the very few people that are, they want to see that sort of thing. And this is sort of like the people who are your most loyal customers and will soldier through you like through thick and thin, you're fucking with them to get a customer that is never going to want you. And I think that is a level where like they just, there's sort of like a misinterpretation of like what they're supposed to be doing.
That is a trick spot they're in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know what the right move is to get people to watch the Oscars, mm-hmm. but like, it's not everything they're doing. Everything they're doing seems wrong, but I don't know what the right answer is either.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of things like, the funniest thing I love is whenever the Oscars announces that they're doing something and like some Joe Schmo on Twitter is like, yeah, fucking, I'm not tuning in this year. I'm like, I know you weren't tuning in, period. I see the viewership numbers. Yeah. They're the lowest they've ever been. No one's watching this shit. And it's not because like they're cutting an award or because they're like some movie that you don't like was nominated. Like it's crazy. A lot of people like are very performatively upset about the Oscars that don't ever actually watch it. But anyway, make sure you vote for the Goscars, which is much more important.
Yes.
Find the link to vote for that in the description for the podcast.
Can I present a Goscar? Can I wear a suit and present a Goscar?
You can absolutely present a Goscar. I think we have one that's good. That will be good lined up for you. One last bit before we get into our Studio 666 review. This is something I only found out recently today. And I think it pertains to us only because I know at least me and Jeff, I don't know how you guys feel about these movies, are huge fans of Paddington.
I just watched them for the first time. I just finished the second one probably last week. And delightful. Just as delightful as they're hyped up to be.
Exactly. Like legitimately very good movies. And what I found out today was that the Ukrainian president, the guy who's all over the news, like literally everywhere you look, you see the Ukrainian president because of what's going on there. He did the voiceover dub for the Ukrainian version of Paddington. So if you watched Paddington in Ukrainian, the Paddington bear was voiced by the president of Ukraine. Which is just an insane fact.
Like, what was this? I'm guessing. I feel like I should know this. Was this? I'm guessing this was before he was president.
Yes.
So was he? Okay. Maybe you guys don't know. Was he like an actual like local celebrity in Ukraine, and like that's how he rose?
He was an actor. Yeah, like
an entertainer, an actor. Yeah.
He was in a show. This is crazy. He was in a show where he played like a school teacher who went on a political rant and became president. And it was the funny thing that, he's the president, and he, like, didn't mean to be the president. And now he's the president.
Yeah, he was on Dancing with the Stars in Ukraine, too. Like,
It's good to know that it's not just America where that weird shit happens.
Exactly,
Exactly, this is happening in one of their plays.
Yeah, you know what's so funny to me, man, is like, that is a really interesting tidbit. But, like, according to Rotten Tomatoes, the Paddington duology, I know they're making a third one, is the most well-received film series of all time. Like they have like, they are.
They're
they
so good, man. They're so
they,
good. That's
they
why.
Have 100, I think they have 99% and 100% respectively. Like,
Fucking Armand White definitely voted that shit
of
down.
Course
he is. Oh, Armand.
He
yeah.
is he still reviewing?
He absolutely. He's for
he
like
has,
the,
probably is. Yeah.
Like a national reviewer.
As long as he's breathing, he's reviewing. Yeah. He's, you know, going the opposite way.
Yeah. What a guy.
Son of a bitch, just ruining every 100 there is on Rotten Tomatoes. God damn it. So before we get into our Studio 666 review, first, let's hear from our friends at Manscaped. Let's talk a bit about Manscaped. And sorry, I don't have like a song and dance. I don't have crotch full of pubes for you guys today. But I do have good news. Manscaped launched their Ultra Premium Collection. It is an all-in-one hair and skin kit for the everyday man that covers you from head to toe, literally. They're trusted below the waist. Now you can trust them with the rest. This package includes Manscaped Premium Deodorant, Hydrating Body Spray, which, you know, if you have dry skin or whatever, you spray on this lotion and it kind of keeps you moisturized and smooth. You smell fresh. It also has body wash, which is infused with aloe vera, sea salt, and shower gel as well. It's 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. You can clean your scalp with one easy step, plus a free gift. It's a 3-pack of lip balm. That's 4 products plus a gift inside the Ultra Premium Collection. What a score! All of these products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, vegan-friendly, and dye-free. The best ingredients with zero compromise. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle, thanks to Manscaped. Thank you, Manscaped. Now we're going to talk about Studio 666, a movie that kind of snuck up on me. I only had seen a couple advertisements for it like over the last week. And then we were like figuring out what movie to do. I was like, why don't we just do Studio 666? It's a Foo Fighters movie, horror, goofy, like, let's check it out. And of course, had to invite Robbie on. I mean, Robbie knows more about music than probably anyone I know at Barstool. So, like, I think it all just kind of everything fits in perfect. If you aren't aware with the what the movie is about or anything like that, it's kind of like they're all stuck in the Foo Fighters in real life. They're stuck in a little horror house trying to make an album because they're out of like writer's block, and a lot of crazy horror hijinks come to be. And I'll say right now, we're definitely going to do this as like a spoiler review because there's not a lot to talk about from a non-spoiler standpoint. But let's do this actually, just for those listening that maybe want just something about it. We just give really quick thoughts on it. And I'll just say, for me, I went into this not knowing anything about it, not like just barely had a grasp of what the general vibe of the movie was. I really enjoyed myself through most of it. And I think I left the movie pleasantly surprised because it definitely picked up towards the later half of the movie. But Robbie, what'd you think?
I loved it. But like I said earlier, I am the biggest Dave Grohl Foo Fighters fan out there. I think I said on the first episode ever of My Mom's Basement, my all-time dream guest would be Dave Grohl. So like, I am the target audience for this movie. They're like, hey, you'll watch Dave Grohl do anything, right? Be in a horror movie. Yes, I'm there for it. So I loved it. I loved the little in references to the Foo Fighters songs. I loved all of the cheesy acting that was like definitely a part of it. It was a part of the campiness of the movie. I thought the kills were surprisingly well done. It was like, oh my God, like they're actually going for some fun, creative kills in this slasher movie. And I think if you don't care for the Foo Fighters, if you don't care for slasher movies or cheesy, campy comedies, you're not going to care for this movie. You're not going to like this movie. No. If you like the Foo Fighters, if you know the names of the Foo Fighters other than Dave, this movie's made for you. And you'll enjoy watching them goof around, curse more times than I've ever seen anyone curse in a movie. Every other sentence had a fuck bomb in it. And I think by the end, it started to, like, they did that horror movie thing that I don't like where they do a false ending. They're like, oh, you thought the movie was over, but now it's still going. And then you thought it was over, but it's still going. They could have cut probably 15 minutes off of it. I didn't need the kind of extra fight at the end. No. You could have got into that earlier. But yeah, as the target audience for this movie, it really worked for me. I liked Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park when I was really little, which is one of the worst movies ever made, where Ace Frehley's stunt double is literally a black guy, and Ace Frehley is not black. I liked Hard Day's Night when I got a little older. I liked Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny when I got a little older than that. And I feel like this fits into the repertoire of like goofy comedy movies that bands make. And it's a fun time for fans of those bands, but maybe not anyone else.
All right, Chris, non-spoiler thoughts.
Robbie, you nailed it. Because I don't care for this movie, but I'm not angry at all. Like, I don't, it just, it's really not my kind of movie whatsoever. I would give it a relatively low rating, but I like those guys. They're really talented. And Dave Grohl, talk about another celebrity who's like really unproblematic. Dave Grohl's like the most likable guy alive. Like, you know, excellent. And like actually a good actor. The only moments in this movie that made me laugh are like Dave Grohl just has an expressive face. Like there's a moment where he's just eating a steak that made me laugh. I don't but I didn't particularly care for it, but it's a band movie. Like I know the Beatles were not very good actors and they made stupid movies, but I like fucking Help and A Hard Day's Night because I love the goddamn Beatles. So this is, this to me is a movie that is by definition critic proof. If you are into this world, if you're into these people, you're going to like it quite a bit. It features a lot of stuff that generally I don't like in movies. I'm not a fan of jump scares. I did not find the humor particularly funny, but that's where there's another problem where the entire thing feels like an in-joke that I just didn't get, but a lot of people will get it. So I'm not going to knock anybody for enjoying the movie. It's just, it wasn't for me, but there's no vitriol or ill will towards it. It's fine.
All right. And if you're listening now, we're going to go into spoilers. So turn it off if you haven't watched it yet. But for everyone else, I think just for me, I think, again, I didn't watch any of the promotional stuff going into it, none of the trailers. I didn't like read any of the stuff. I really had no idea what to expect. But I think it was really weird, really funky, and just pretty basically like exactly what I expected, like a horror movie made by the Foo Fighters would be. And I think for me, it's also just easier to kind of break it down into pros and cons versus trying to give it like a more traditional format. And for the pros, I think I really knew what it was. Very campy. Very over the top, very goofy and weird, and I love that. And I think that another great pro is like making a movie that is as gory and violent as this movie is, and for it to not be scary is difficult. And I think they nailed that balance perfectly. I think they did an awesome job, like exaggerating the personas of the band. Like, I'm not overly familiar, like super overly familiar with the Foo Fighters or anything. I like them a lot. I can't say I knew more than two people in that band.
That's the case for most people, honestly. Even like a lot of Foo Fighters fans, I feel like are like, yeah, I love Dave and Taylor and all the rest of the guys too.
Yeah, exactly. That's literally me. But yeah, so I think they did a good job of exaggerating the personas. So like, even for me, not knowing a lot of these guys, like, you got them as a character. And like, I think that they did that part of it really well. For me, I agree with you, Chris, that the humor didn't always land, but I think it was really good when it did. And I think the funniest laugh that I got out of the movie was the back and forth between Rami and Chris about Rami's grandma, which was so fucking weird. In the best way, when he's just like talking about fucking his grandma or whatever, it was so goddamn strange.
You leave my Bibu alone.
Yeah, you leave my Bibu alone. It was so, and he's just making that weird face, like that part made me like
that horrified, like Troll 2 face almost. Yeah,
exactly. On the con side, I think it was, I agree with you, Robbie, a bit too long. And I think my biggest complaint about the entire thing was that there was just too much cursing and it wasn't atmospheric cursing where it's like, you know, Goodfellas or whatever, where it's just like, like that's just the way people talk. Like, this
is the way the band talks if you listen to their interviews. But it's like, oh my God, when you're watching like a 2-hour movie nonstop of it, you're like, yeah, there was a lot of F-bombs.
Yeah, just a lot of fucks and shits and everything, like all and like nonstop as many times as they could. And like, again, if you're a fan of the band and this is the way they operate, like that's great. That's perfect. As a more casual fan, it was a little bit of a turnoff. The pacing was a little bit frazzled and all over the place. Definitely like that false ending thing you were talking about, Robbie, was a little bit of a bummer. But other than that, I really came out of it like appreciating it for what it was, acknowledging what about it didn't work, but also just like I had fun with it, man. I had fun. I'm like watching all these dudes get killed. I had fun like of all these goofy lines. A little bit over the top, a little too long, but that's basically it. I landed on a 67 out of 100 on it. But what about you, Rob?
Oh, man, this is such a tough score for me to give because, like Chris said, it's kind of critic proof and it's made for me. I would probably give it something like a enjoyment level. I would probably give it like an 80. Like as far as like how it was made as a movie, I would probably give it somewhere in the 40s or 50s or something. I don't know. But the big like not issue I had with it, but when Jeff Garland comes in at the end to fight Dave and do that whole thing, I was like, oh my God, you could have like, it felt like they almost like showed us the first draft of the script as a movie where I was like, oh my God, cut that entire fight out of the scene. You don't need that fight at all. You just need him to show up at the end and be like, you did it. You completed the song, didn't you? And you do the kills, like the kill with the final two, Nate and Pat, where he runs them over with the truck and everything. It was another cool kill where I was like, okay, that was creative. I like the way you kind of saw it coming. They completely telegraph it. But you could have done without that, and then you remove like a big chunk, and I feel like it's a much smoother, cohesive movie. I loved the John Carpenter cameo. The fact that they got John Carpenter to do the score, and then he was just like the sound engineer for them. That was like, you sure we don't need you? Another interesting tidbit that I want to throw in for any people that don't know like the story of how this was made or anything. This is actually like how they made their last album. They went to this house that's in the movie, and they were like, this house is fucking haunted. We're hearing weird shit. Our amps are turning off. And that gave them the idea to, they were like, we have the house for 2 months. The record's going to take us 2 weeks. Why don't we throw together a quick slasher movie where the concept is Dave gets possessed. He kills everyone in the band. He goes solo. And it just turned into it unraveled into a full movie that they put out in theaters across the country. When you listen to that album now, it's like, to me, cooler. I listened to that album today and I was happy that the movie also wasn't like just an advertisement for their last album. It wasn't full of songs from it. They used one song from it during the credits. So I was like very happy about that. I mean, for what it was for Foo Fighters fans, it was as good as I could have asked for. I feel like I was very, very satisfied with what we got.
And I get that completely. Again, it's not even, I can't even really give it a legitimate rating just because
a real movie. It's like a hangout movie for like only fans of the Foo Fighters.
Exactly. This is going to sound like a weird comparison, but do you guys remember do you guys know what the only movie Roger Ebert never gave a rating to was?
What's that?
I don't know.
It was Human Centipede. Because he was like, because he watched it and he's like, I don't know if this is the biggest, no pun intended, the biggest pile of shit ever, or if it's meant to be like, this is a exploitation-y joke movie, so I can't grade it on the merits that I would grade most other movies. That's kind of how I feel about this, and it doesn't make it bad. There's one thing, though, that unintentionally made me laugh. Dude, what is it with members of Scream 5 getting typecast in weird shit? Mikey Madison can only get set on fire in movies, and Jenna Ortega can only be the actress in the opening scene of horror movies who either gets killed or almost gets killed. Second movie in a month. It was all like this one, especially almost the exact same scene, except in this one, she actually gets killed. And that is the one thing you brought it up, Robbie. That is the one thing about this movie that actually is awesome. It has some of the best gore and some of the best kills that I've seen in a movie. We're in spoilers now. Yes. Right?
Yeah. Full on
the chainsaw kill. Man, that kill was badass. Insane. That was awesome.
And the fact that they show him like splitting too, like, oh my God.
No, that's what I said. Cause it built. I'm like, man, this is great. If they don't show that fucking body splitting in half, this movie's bullshit. And I was like, oh, that was sick.
The symbol like, kill on Taylor too. Oh my God. That was great.
Yeah. It's weird. Cause one of the issues I enjoyed Scream 5 more than I didn't, but one of the issues I had with it was I didn't feel like the kills were particularly original with this. If the kills in this would have been in Scream 5, I think I would have liked it a lot more because they really – they are unique from the beginning when Jenna Ortega's head gets turned into fucking hamburger meat. I was like, wow, there's – like I would like to see these guys make another movie but actually like do it like the way Rob Zombie made, you know, Devil's Rejects or something like that where you actually – you really dive into the horror because I think in – if – as far as the comedy goes, again, if you like the Foo Fighters, you'll really like the comedy and it'll make you laugh, but it didn't do much for me. So I can't really give it like a, you know, you could say it's a cop out, but I can't really give it like a specified rating. It's just there and some people like it. Some people won't. That's fine.
I would only recommend it to fans of Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters. That's what I would say about it. It's like, I don't know.
No, I think that's a good qualifier. I think I would amend it only to say that I think you will get maximum enjoyment out of this if you are a huge fan of the Foo Fighters. As a casual fan myself, I still found a lot of enjoyment out of it as like a very campy, like messy movie. But it's another thing, Wicker. I almost agree with you, Chris, in that like I wouldn't go out of my way to recommend it to somebody and be like, you gotta watch the 666, man. You're gonna love it. It's so cool.
It doesn't reinvent anything. Like, it's not gonna blow you away, but it's a fun time, definitely. And it's also like, its weirdness really helps it a lot. The weird raccoon that was like hanging in the basement and that was all skinned and the gardener and Whitney Cummings, I thought was pretty funny in this too. When she starts singing Best of You to Dave Grohl, I thought that was a funny scene.
Yeah, and they played that perfectly. That went on just long enough, but not too long. Like that fit perfectly. And what's his name? Rami being very horny for
her. Yeah, her romance with Rami was funny the whole time because Rami's also like the latest addition to the Foo Fighters. Like he was doing studio work for them for a long time, and then he officially like finally became part of the band, but he's very hippy-dippy and he is in the movie. So even seeing Pat Smear just be so Pat Smear in this movie, and he was by far, I thought, the worst actor of all of them.
Oh, yeah.
But it was so him that I was like, there's a charm about it.
Great screaming, though. He had some awesome screams in this movie.
He was the scream queen of this movie.
The very funny scene, too, was what's called Dave Grohl like knocking the Doritos out of his hand. He's been like, come on, man. And like
I liked him sleeping in the kitchen every time where the real estate agent walks in on what she thinks is his dead body, and he's just like, no, I'm chilling. There's snacks in here.
Wearing the nightcap and everything.
Yeah.
That was very funny. And what's his name? And the guy from Slayer being the tech that gets fried, the guitarist
was Krug,
Krug. Awesome. That was just a good name too, because they just kept going like when he was having like the nightmares, Dave Grohl, he was going like waking up going, Krug. Just a perfect name for that.
Is it just one last add-on though? Oh, I didn't know who that was. So like I watched and I'm like, okay, the guy just got electrocuted and died. Like, but it speaks to like the point we've been making, which is if you are a fan, if you know the in-jokes and you understand the references, you're going to watch this. Like one of my favorite movies ever is The Disaster Artist, right? Because I love the fucking Room. And I think in general, The Disaster Artist is way more accessible, but there's so many little bits in The Disaster Artist where I go, oh man, I remember that from The Room. I remember that scene. They're making fun of that scene. But if you don't know the source material, you'd probably watch and be like, this fucking movie made by this weird, like, French alien is just bizarre. Like, what? I don't understand this. It's similar here, where if you know the references and the in jokes, you're going to fall in love with it. I didn't know most of them. I know what Doritos is, and this movie goes out of its way to make it does. This movie is Dorito-lific.
This thing is
chock full. They must have funded the whole thing.
There's a lot of product placement. But beyond that, yeah, it's whatever, man. It's fine. Yeah.
Will Forte had a pretty good little bit too. I liked his his little struggling band runner or whatever. What was his band name? It was
what was it?
It was on the CD.
It was like bone structure.
Bone debt or bone structure,
it might have just been
bone structure.
Bone structure.
I loved the scene of him trying to hype himself up in the car before making the second delivery, where he's like, "Hey, Dave, I forgot you were staying here. Remember that demo I told you about?" That was really funny to me. I liked all the cameos, the Lionel Richie cameo, the John Carpenter cameo. Like, the movie did well on the cameos.
I had completely forgotten about the Lionel Richie one because that was so early on, like in the movie,
and so random. He just said, "Get your own song, nerd."
that was another pretty funny part too, was when he was trying to, he's like, guys, I got a new riff, and then it's just like a song that he had already done before, like that's
all my life. And then when he came up with the L sharp, that
yes,
like, as a like ridiculous thing, that reminded me of a Tenacious D joke. I was like, that would be a joke in the Pick of Destiny, like they're trying to find the secret chord, and you know, it's unveiling. I thought all that was good, and the never-ending song. All of those scenes were funny. I want them to release like a 40-minute song now. I want to hear the full song.
Dude, that song rocked, man. I actually thought it was kind of cool. That full death metal-y kind of song. Like, I was like, I want to listen more of that. After I watched this movie, I came into work right after because I watched it like a super early morning show.
Yeah.
And I listened to the Doom soundtrack for like the next like 2 hours because it's like kind of like a similar vibe. And I like their whole production issues behind the whole thing was very funny, I thought, as well. Where they're just like more complaining about like the structure of it and being like we're doing like a fucking 40-minute long song. Like, what is this, Dave? And he's just like, we're doing the fucking song. Like, I don't know, man. I just there's a lot to like about this movie. If you go into it with an open mind and you go into it not expecting it to be a traditional horror movie, not expecting it to be a comedy movie, but expecting it to be kind of like Evil Dead meets like you I think had a comparison like this, right, Robbie? Or you had seen it somewhere. Someone said it's like watching Get Out mixed with
a hard day's night.
Someone said
Drenched in Blood. Yeah, they were like, this is a Hard Day's Night drenched in blood and gore. And I was like,
Hard Day's Night combined with Evil Dead is the guy, I think, exactly how I'd put it, except definitely a little more gory. Because those kills, man, they were nuts.
Crazy. The amount of blood that came out of everyone. They were like, all right, gallons of blood on every kill. More blood. Add more blood. I loved it.
Yep. There's a lot of really good ones in that. We're kind of all the place score-wise. I think it's okay to say that it's not a scorable movie and that it is more of like a fan movie. And like it's
I'm
not
surprised
really, it's like
it even got the wide release that it did, to be honest with you. I'm surprised they didn't say this is, you know, straight to streaming for Foo Fighters fans for $20.
Which that's another issue. This should have gone straight to streaming. There's nothing cinematic about this.
You could have done the one night release for the people that wanted that, but you didn't need it.
I think that they found a perfect spot because everyone knows how huge the Batman is going to be, that people are afraid to open movies next week. They were afraid to open movies this week because they know next weekend they're just going to get crushed, and they just happen to find the one movie that's going to be.
And it is only 1 week. I saw like this is out of theaters by next
week. Oh, really? Okay, then they probably, maybe that's what they're going to do then, just put it right on streaming after that, which is all right,
I think there is kind of a potential there, too. Like, they just thought, hey, look, horror is an absolutely financially bulletproof genre. Like, you could put out the world's shittiest horror movie. It'll make billions more money than, like, any given great indie movie. It does not matter. So, like, that might be part of the thought process, too. I'm sure it outperformed a lot of other movies just in that small little release window. Enjoyable, depending on your level of consumption for Foo Fighters. I'm definitely not a movie I think any of us would widely recommend to the general public, but we all got bits we liked about it. Before we wrap up, we're going to do a Build a Rock Band draft, which I'm very excited for. We're going to do a little draft. We have an audience czar that submitted his picks earlier. I'm not going to tell you who it is just yet. We're going to draft each or one of us. We're going to draft one singer, one guitar player, one bassist, one drummer, and one miscellaneous. Could be anything you want. Could be another guitarist, another whatever. It could be anything, literally anything you want. I already pre-established the draft order. It is going to be Robbie, then me, then our mystery person, and then Chris.
Okay.
I didn't just pick it. It was on randomizer. I did it through good old randomizer.com, I think it's called, actually.
Well, that works out because I think the last time we did a draft, I think I started first. So order-wise, it worked out. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, Robbie, you got the number one overall pick.
Wow. This is a lot of pressure. I'm excited to do this, by the way, because growing up a music fan, you do this in conversations all the time. You do, like, let's build a supergroup. I think I might have flogged it before. I'll text with my brother and my uncles every few months, like, let's build supergroups. With my first overall pick, I'm going to take a guitar player. I'm going to fill my guitar slot with this one.
Okay.
It is the Batman week, and I am going to take Prince as my guitar player.
Ooh.
Great
Bat pick. Dance.
Yeah.
He has the original Batman 89 soundtrack. He could double as a singer, obviously. Maybe he fills in for some background vocals in my band, but I'm taking him for his skills with the axe because he is one of my favorite guitar players of all time, without a doubt.
Absolutely phenomenal pick.
Impossible to complain. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like one of the few people. There's like, I think, three people on the entirety of the pool I'm looking at that are worthy of a first overall. Prince is one of them.
Yeah, can't go wrong with Prince, his royal badness.
Exactly. I think I will go with singer, and I will go with Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
And just because, like, he's arguably the greatest singer of all time. He's one of the greatest rock, or I would say rock presences, or made one of the biggest contributions to rock in the time period that he was active. And just, I got to pick him. I love all the rest of my picks for every single position, but like, I have to pick Freddie Mercury because he's on the board.
Another perfect pick.
At least I hope so. So next up is our audience czar. And I'll tell you who our audience czar is. Our audience czar is PFT Commenter.
That's fun.
He submitted a lot of options. But for there's one bit he had in this entire thing, which is he was going to have his singer be Dan Reynolds, his guitarist be Daniel Wayne, his bassist was going to be, did I put it down here, Ben McKee, his drummer was going to be Daniel Platzman, and then his miscellaneous was going to be Little Wayne from his feature on Radioactive by Imagine Dragons, which is the entirety of everyone he just named. All the people I just named, you're like, I don't know who the fuck they are. That's Imagine Dragons.
Gotcha.
The entire list of Imagine Dragons.
I was wondering why I didn't recognize those names. There you go, PFT. Yeah.
I'm going to avoid that bit, and I'm going instead to use his next list. Let's do, he has a lot of really good ones. I feel like he would be mad if I didn't start off with guitar and pick Jimi Hendrix.
Great one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jimi Hendrix.
Now, I had him on my list, but I was like, do I pick Hendrix? Because if you pick Hendrix, it just becomes the Jimi Hendrix band.
Yeah, exactly.
Experience, yeah. If you will. Yeah.
That's kind of the issue I have with having Freddie Mercury now is now everything is a supporting cast member to Freddie Mercury. So I'm going to have to
work. But he's a pretty good centerpiece.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So, Chris, you're up.
I've gone back and forth. I'm starting with drummer. In the words of Chester Cheeto on Family Guy, there is no fucking drummer better than Neil Peart. the late, great Neil Peart. I mean, whether Neil Peart was such a great drummer that even if you aren't a fan of that band, you acknowledge the contributions he made to rock music and the contributions he made to drumming. Absolute legend. I'm going to go with him as my drummer because I beyond him, there was nobody that like really stood out as like this is first ballot guy. So yeah, I'm going Neil Peart to start.
It's so funny. It's all coming full circle again to Freaks and Geeks. Which, by the way, you mentioned artist James Franco, centerpiece of Freaks and Geeks, and also Jason Segel is a drummer in that, and he's obsessed with Rush.
Yeah,
he builds his Neil Peart kit in his garage. Yeah. It's so great.
His 29-piece drum set is so funny.
Doesn't he bring Lindsay to see it, like their first date? He's like, look at my kit. Isn't that awesome?
He auditions with like a group, like a local band or something like that, and he's like, yeah, I got a 29-piece drum set, and I go, oh. Maybe you get it. Maybe eventually you'll get one more and it'll be up to 30 and even 30. That'll be cool. Right, dude. And he's like, oh, everyone thinks this is lame. All right, Chris, your back to back pick.
Well, real quick, that little sidebar of all the reunion shows that have been done lately. I'm surprised there's never been a pitch for like a 6-episode revival of Freaks and Geeks.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously the James Franco stuff throws a wrench in all those plans, but you could do it without him.
And let Dave do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. Next. This is more – well, the guy was an amazing vocalist. A little bit more of a sentimental pick because I grew up on his music, and I think as famous as he was, I would argue is almost underrated as a vocalist. The late, great Chester Bennington, the lead singer from my band. I mean, I think – I once read a YouTube comment. Maybe somebody else started this. I don't know if it started on YouTube. Scream like a demon, sing like an angel. Chester Bennington, one of the all-time great rock vocalists. You know, so versatile as a singer. You know that he could do Somewhere I Belong and just or you know any one of those huge power ballads that they did. And then he could do fucking Shadow of the Day and just kill it and sound like your traditional ballad singer. So Chester Bennington, my lead singer, along with Neil Peart as my drummer.
That's an amazing pick. Also, Neil Peart as your drummer gets you a guy to write lyrics as well. Neil Peart wrote all the lyrics in Rush. And Chester, what an amazing pick. That's sentimental for me as well. We're around the same age. So you grow up with Linkin Park. You grow up with the Transformers songs. I got to see him once. I was lucky enough to see him. Not with Linkin Park. I had tickets to see Linkin Park, unfortunately, like 2 weeks after he passed away. But I saw him with Kings of Chaos, a super group in the city with like Matt Sorum and people from Queens of the Stone Age, people from Cheap Trick. Oh my God.
That's
amazing.
Crazy.
Live. And he walked on stage wearing like the shirt he was wearing said like, I met God, she's black. And I was like, this guy's a fucking rock star.
That's just the most rock star. I love that though. That's a curveball. I wouldn't have expected. And I feel like I should have, but I
expected it from Chris because I've seen him post about Chester before. And I was like, I kind of hoped it. I was like, I hope Chester gets drafted in this.
Did you guys ever see, it's one of my favorite like YouTube videos ever, just it's like it should. And I'm surprised it hasn't become like a world famous GIF when they're singing alongside Jay-Z.
Yeah,
and he finishes this insane riff, and the look on Jay-Z's face, like holy shit, that was impressive.
When Chester does what a big legend, scream, man. Yeah, that was like the one and only Collision Course concert they did in New York City. You can find it on YouTube, and it's well worth a watch. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. When Jay-Z walks on stage, he's wearing like a bowling shirt. I think just a freaking awesome video.
That's so cool. I can't wait. I gotta actually watch that. I've never seen that before. Okay, so PFT with his pick, he's gonna go with singer, and he's gonna go with Robert Plant, obviously lead singer of Led Zeppelin. Great pick. He's one of those guys where I didn't understand how he reached the range he got, because he hit such a high pitch in some of those notes, like it's crazy. Such a good singer, and like just like kind of like the iconic voice behind some of the greatest songs of all time. And I feel like it's a great pick.
Definitely, especially you have Jimi Hendrix in there. It's like, how do you outpower Jimi Hendrix? Well, I'll tell you how you do that with Robert Plant's voice. They would go together phenomenally. So great pick by PFT.
Totally agree. I think I am going to go with guitarist. And this is where it gets hard, because I have so many picks on mine where like I really like them, but how do they accompany Freddie?
Yeah.
And I think I'll do Eric Clapton. Yeah, I'll do Eric Clapton.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, I'll do a little Eric Clapton here. I think he's going to be a good – whatever you think about him as a human – I think he's a good side. He's a good pairing.
You might get some rants at your concert, some anti-vax rants at your concert, but the music will be very good.
You know what? The more I think about it, should I take him or should I take – you know what? I'm backing out of that pick. I'm backing out of Clapton.
Canceled.
Backing out of Clapton. There are certain sects of Thriller that are going to go after me for this. I'm going to switch it to Carlos Santana.
Great
pick. I can't believe I did not think of him in my guitars. Wow. Yeah.
Coley's favorite musician of all time.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. I've seen him tweet about him all the time.
Santana, like more than anybody I know. Yeah.
Smooth featuring Rob Thomas, one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah.
I like how I say featuring Rob Thomas. It was Rob Thomas featuring Santana, or was it the other way around? I don't know.
No, it was. That's a huge pet peeve of mine in music, is when somebody either plays a guitar or spins some records, and then they say that person featuring the guy who actually sang the song. So I think it was Santana featuring Rob Thomas at the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm sticking with my guns. Well, the opposite of sticking with my guns, because I originally had Clapton, but I'm going to go with Santana, and I'm actually happy with that, because I think that does pair well with Freddie. Robbie, you're up.
So I have back-to-back picks here. Is that right?
Yeah, you do. Yes.
Swinging back around. I'm going to draft my rhythm section with back-to-back picks. So I'm going to get a drummer first, and I'm going to take John Bonham from Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Bonzo is one of the all-time greats, not only in just his drumming, but in his rock star personality. The stories about this guy, you look at him the wrong way. He was busting your face in. He was kicking you in the nuts. He was driving his chopper away from it with his amazing mustache. So I'm taking John Bonham. And then my bass player will be Paul McCartney. McCartney himself.
Yeah. That was my tattoo.
I mean, I had a bunch written down. There's a bunch of great ones, but when it comes to Paul, his sense for rhythm, his sense for what to play in an actual song, unmatched. He is, I think, the greatest, like, greatest musician at, like, knowing what a song needs. That's probably still alive at this point. So, John Bonham, Paul McCartney, and Prince is the start here.
That's a really good pick. Yeah. Damn. You could have just honestly built the entire Beatles with this list, too. I just didn't really think about
it. Could have done that.
Ringo's,
yeah,
I mean, people forget, Ringo Starr is sneakily a very good drummer. Like,
Ringo is awesome. Another person who just knows what a song needs. You listen, there's a bunch of TikToks that actually, like, people are going back and giving him his due. And people are like, here's what Ringo could have played in the song. And very simple, like what a drummer would think to play. And here's what he played. And you realize through that, like, how unique the stuff he was doing is. Like a song like In My Life, where you listen to the subtlety of the drums on that. Like, he really, really was the best.
Yeah.
That was a monster. And this makes me think now I need to get into my basses, because the basses, I think, is actually for me anyway the thinnest category. Like, I have so many picks for basically every other position here. Mm-hmm. For bass, I originally was thinking whoever does the Seinfeld theme song, because it doesn't matter, it's the most iconic bass riff of all time.
Like, there's nothing slap in there.
There's no more iconic bass riff in history than that guy, but I don't know who that guy is. So,
player, we hate that, by the way. Every time you pick up a bass at a sound check, someone's like, do the Seinfeld theme. Like, yep. I don't fucking know the Seinfeld theme.
So I'm going to end up going with another Rush guy, Geddy Lee. I mean, guy's a monster. I mean, and that's another thing. Like, I listen to Rush, like not a crazy amount growing up or anything like that. But I remember when I watched I Love You, Man, I was like they fucking loved Rush, and they kept talking about it. The whole joke in that movie is slap the bass and all that. And like, I went and re-listened to it, a lot of Rush, and like, man, the basses in those are like so good. Like, all of them are incredible. So I'm going to go with the
impossible to play, by the way. Impossible to play.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone play and sing at the same time and play keyboards with your toes. That's what Geddy Lee does on stage. Unfair talent right there. I hope, by the way, I get tweets all the time like, you're going to look like Geddy Lee when you get old. Oh, I could only hope I look that cool when I get old.
Could only wish. Yeah. He does look awesome, especially with those like colored sunglasses and shit. Like,
so cool. So cool. He is aged like fine wine.
They're so badass. All right, PFT's back up. For him, let's do, you took his drummer, his top billed drummer, in John Bonham. So let's go with his next bill, Travis Barker. It's a little bit of a surprise pick, and I don't know how well he meshes with Jimi Hendrix and Robert Plant, but like, he's undeniably a very gifted drummer. So
yeah, you know, okay, good pick. Travis could play anything. He could hit some hard rock with them.
Yeah, no. I agree. All right, Chris, you're up.
All right, I got back to backs now.
Yes,
I'm surprised nobody went with this guy yet, and I think he will play so well with Bennington as the lead singer. My guitarist, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. Mm-hmm. Dude can shred. I mean, I think that his sensibilities as a musician would fit really well with Chester Bennington. I believe they knew each other and were friends, in real life. And you know what? Hey, shout out to Guitar Hero 3, the first exposure I ever had to, Tom Morello. And you know what? Those games weirdly influenced and introduced a lot of people to classic rock. So, they did their job. So, good on Tom Morello, man. A guy can absolutely shred. Now, for my kind of fifth member, keyboardist, I went with Yanni.
The idea of
Yanni doing some operatic shit with Bennington on the vocals and Tom Morello shredding on the guitar. Those are my that's my pick for my extra. Those are my most recent two. Yeah.
Love I that. Dig
That's
it. Really That's cool,
a great
actually.
Shout on the Guitar Hero 3, by the way, because that guitar battle against Tom Morello, you could look that up on YouTube and listen to it to this day as a song, and it is awesome. One of the most recognizable guitar tones ever, too. He plays one chord, and you're like, oh, that's Tom Morello.
I would say some of the first exposure I ever had to YouTube at all was like there was a time where if you had a friend who could get through the fire and the flames on Expert, that friend was just cooler than everyone you knew. Yeah. They made a fucking South Park episode about it. Like that was those
games, great people, South Park episode. Yeah.
It gets overlooked how huge, like I know people say Rock Band was big and it was. Guitar Hero was such an ingenious idea for a video game. And nostalgic.
I want it to come back. Put out another Guitar Hero for next gen systems. I would work my way through that game in one day. I would love it.
Yeah.
I actually recently followed the Dragon Force guitarist. I think his name is Herman Lee. And he's awesome. Like he has like, he does all his TikToks in front of his wall of guitars. He has like 100 guitars up on his wall and he just sits there and he'll like duet people making TikToks about Through the Fire and Flames. And like, he's fucking actually shredding. And like, it's just, it's so cool. I love like the people who are like aware of the cultural impact, even if it's not through the medium that they wanted. Like he, I'm sure would rather Dragon Force to be like traditionally like Beatles successful or whatever, but like he doesn't care. People love it through Guitar Hero.
Like, we got that one song in Guitar Hero.
Exactly.
More people listen to that song than most people listen to any band songs. Like, oh my god, that song got a lot of play back in the day.
Crazy. And everyone knows it. It's great. And I think everyone had one friend that could beat it. And like, or at least he said he could in high school or in middle school, whatever. And like, man, that guy was the coolest. All right, PFT's up. He's gonna go. Let's do a bassist, and let's do. Man, he has a lot. He has one pick that I don't know if he picked it as a joke or not. He picked Fat Mike from NoFX.
No, he's a good bass player.
I don't even know what band is it, NoFX. I'm not even sure of it. I thought it was some sort of bit, like a ska bit.
No, they were like a 90s punk band.
Oh, I'm looking at them now. Featuring Avenged Sevenfold. Yeah, okay. All right, this makes sense now. Then I don't want to pick that because I feel like it'll mess with the cohesiveness of this fledgling.
It's a random pick for sure.
So let's do Les Claypool. Les Claypool instead. I feel like that's a better pick for his bass player, at least with the group he has right now.
You can't go wrong with Les Claypool.
I agree. For me, I'm going to pick my drummer, and I have so many drummers on here. I really want the guy we talked about before, but you know, I'll go Phil Collins. Go Phil Collins.
Oh, nice pick. Nice pick, Collins. Phil Collins on the drums, because you get his background vocals then too.
His background vocals to Freddie Mercury, like, can you imagine those angelic voices just dueling with each other on like a track that ends up in Emily in Paris because his daughter's in it or something? Like, it would be incredible. All right, Robbie, you have your last two picks.
Finish it off here. Okay, so for my singer, I'm going to get another person who unfortunately passed away recently and one of my favorite singers of all time, one of the greatest voices of all time, Chris Cornell. He's a good friend of Chester Bennington.
Almost went with that.
Yeah they did that version of Hunger Strike together. That's on YouTube. You could watch it. It's fucking amazing. And I had a bunch of other ones. It was hard for me not to draft my guy Liam Gallagher. I feel like everyone expected that, but I said, let me throw a curveball on these people. And for my miscellaneous person, I'm going to draft someone who a lot of people know as a bass player, but he also was a Swiss Army knife for Led Zeppelin, and that is John Paul Jones. He played the organs, he played the mellotron, he played the keyboards. He can do it all. So he would be my miscellaneous, and you know, Paul McCartney's got the bass locked down, I think, but him on the keyboards, him on the organs, I think would make for a pretty awesome fivesome.
Oh yeah, with Prince singing too, can you imagine? This would like blow the doors off of a stadium.
Mm-hmm. I'm just picturing them doing, and it's the cliche thing to say when it comes to Prince, but While My Guitar Gently Weeps, if they could just do a version of that with Cornell singing, with McCartney on bass, with John Paul Jones on keyboards, with John Bonham on drums, it would be the greatest performance of all time.
All good singers too, for the most part too. Like three of your three of your picks are all great singers, I would say.
Yeah, we'll have those journey harmonies where it's like they're all going in on it together.
Okay, so for my last pick, I have to do my miscellaneous. And for me, I considered Will Ferrell cowbell. This is like, you know, play to the bit a little bit.
Considered Max Rebo on percussion.
Yes, on the space drums, the jizz drums, or whatever they call them. I'm going to go with Herbie Hancock for my keyboard, because I think Herbie Hancock was an underappreciated genius of his time, and somebody who just is like an insanely good grasp of music. And like, I think he's just a fantastic keyboardist. And like, I'll go back and listen to like some of his stuff from like the late 80s. And like, it's weird because like synthy stuff obviously goes out of like out of style, and but like it's still you feel like a very, I don't know, there's a lot of enjoyment I get out of listening to any old Herbie Hancock. It's insane.
That's why people are going back to synth now. The whole last John Mayer album was like, I'm gonna chase down that yacht rock sound.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just gonna do synthy now. All right, PFT's up and he has his miscellaneous pick. Let's do all right, I have to pick this one. He had Lil Wayne. He also had Joe C. He had the car motor that got turned into a drum in Hot for Teacher, which I thought was a cool idea. Very random. I like that one. But I'm going to go with Ben Carr, the dancing guy from the Monty Boss Tones, the guy who always dances for them. Yeah. Ben Carr, as a miscellaneous pick. Insane grouping of human beings he has now on his five-man team. So, Chris, or sign us off.
Well, first of all, the Chris Cornell pick was great. Little side note, I can't get through an episode without creating some controversy. Also responsible for, in my opinion, the best James Bond theme of all time.
You know my name for Casino Royale.
Fucking good and fits for a movie that is so fucking good. My bass player, and I only learned about this guy growing up because he was a Motown staple in Detroit. And it was a bassist for, you know, a ton of Marvin Gaye stuff. James Jamerson. I believe Rolling Stone at one point had him as the greatest bassist of all time. The idea he's the wild card here, but sometimes Round Peg does fit into a square hole because he might not on paper fit in as well with Bennington and Yanni and some of the other guys, that I brought up, Morello, but, smooth sound. Been a part. I was looking at his wiki earlier today. Guy was a bassist for 23 Billboard number one hits. That's insane. That's crazy. And so, that's so much star power there between the five guys I brought up. So yeah, I'm comfortable with that group. I'm going with him.
All right, that's amazing pick. That's going to give you some respect among some like real music heads.
I hope so, man. Yeah.
So this is our team shook out. Chris, you have Neil Peart on the drums, Chester Bennington singing, Tom Morello on guitar, Yanni on keyboard, and it was James Jamerson on bass. PFT has Jimi Hendrix on guitar, Robert Plant singing, Travis Barker on drums, Les Claypool on bass, and Ben Carr dancing his ass off in his miscellaneous pick. I have Freddie Mercury, Carlos Santana, Geddy Lee, Phil Collins, and Herbie Hancock. Robbie, you have Prince on the guitar, John Bonham on the drums, Paul McCartney on bass, Chris Cornell on singing, and then you have John Paul Jones on miscellaneous. Do you think, out of all of these, I do think Robbie's would be the one I'd want to see the most because you have the most cohesive group. I have a lot of practice doing these
little exercises over and over again throughout my life.
Yeah.
I think I would also, though, want to see PFTs because, like, I can't imagine any of these human beings interacting in any shape.
Yeah, that's the Foo Fighters movie of bands. You're like, I just want to see what they made.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to, like, it's a morbid curiosity, sort of. Yeah. But yeah, so that's our teams. That was a fun draft. That was a good one.
I like doing that. Yeah.
It's so weird. Out of all, we did a trillion drafts during the history of LCB. Never once did we do this, which is insane. Because like we've drafted like literally everything pop culture. I don't know how we never drafted anything.
And you've done
advanced.
Like music movies too. You recapped like Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, right? Like those were all in the Lights, Camera era.
We did a lot of like I think soundtrack stuff, a lot of like music from movies, and I just never did this. And it's weird because also Trill Ballins is a massive, massive music head.
Yeah.
And is something he would have loved, which by the way, I asked him to be our audience czar. He said, "Not today, chief," or something along those lines. So TFT was our
brutal.
One. PFT was our 1B. But yeah, I think that's something he would have loved as well. But yeah, thank you guys. Thanks, Robbie, for joining in again, shedding some light on the Foo Fighters part of this that we maybe weren't totally like zeroed in on. Appreciate that. We will have Jeff back sometime soon, I believe in March. But until then, make sure like and subscribe, all that fun stuff. Make sure you go vote for the Goscars too, because that's going to close up soon. And then we're going to start putting together something for that, which will be fun. So go vote for that. The link is in the description for the podcast. But from me, Kenjack, Robbie, Chris,
have a good week at the box office, folks.